trying to think of distances. I don't know. I mean, it's...
I think one thing you have to keep in mind, Chris, is that when you make a plan, you make a plan based on hopes and indeed even on expectations.
Expectations.
And the Canadians here may have hoped the British could take it, just as on other occasions the British there may have hoped we could have taken that. But if you, for one reason or another, either cannot or don't take it, you bloody well can't or don't take it, and your flank is out flapping in the breeze. And that is that. And, you know, if we advanced with our flanks safe all the time, it would be lovely. But that's not war. Neither for us, nor indeed the Germans. So you can make the best plan. You can say we expect the British to be there, or we hope this is not mined, or we anticipate that the river's going to be low. But a spring rain up in the mountains comes down into the coast, floods the river, and the bridges that you anticipate will be there can't be bloody well built. And, you know, these things do occur. But on the actual line itself, on the Adolf Hitler line, what were the defenses like? Was it actually a line, Ken?
Oh, yeah.
It was?
Yeah, it was, I don't know, I think 3 fields of barbed wire. But there were concrete gun emplacements. And of course, there were trench systems.
Yeah.
It was, any house was there was fortified. And,
Fields of fire and trees cut
the
down. Field,
the fields of fire were, it was a difficult thing to do on the plan that we were doing. And it was the usual, we were attacking through woods and trees and groves. Then there'd be an open space. And before the, we were doing a stupid thing, I think. We were following a barrage through a wood. Well, Jesus. You're following a branch through a wood, you suddenly emerged into the open, and then you hit the wire. Well, okay, Bangalore torpedoes. But there was a what seems to me to be a vast open space now between us and the wire. God knows what it was, probably a few hundred yards or something. But
nice
we got across here, but at that point we just came under everything from Aquino. So. Okay, we breached the wire, but...
Well, what do you do, though? This is something I don't understand, is that you breach the wire, you get into the Hitler line, but your flank isn't covered, and you're a sitting duck, almost.
Well, we were started collecting casualties, and I made the fatal error for a commanding officer. I was too far forward. And I was caught up virtually with the forward companies, and in this great flanking fire and barrage. Naturally, we have a barrage, or a German barrage was coming in just right with ours, and so we were suffering some pretty.
Do you just come to a standstill, sir? Is that what do you stand still? You withdraw? You try and punch on?
We lost people. Nobody. We never believed that, you know, that you weren't going to be having lunch in the Hitler line on the objective, and. We kept on going, but where the trouble was, all wireless sets were knocked out. I could talk to nobody. I sent a runner up to see if he could get hold of Watson's A Company, and he'd be up, and he was wounded the last you ever saw of him. The only information of forward companies were from walking wounded, who
coming back.
Came back. If anybody was walking wounded, you'd say, well, it was just a very confused issue of smoke.
Now, would you have to make...
It was the worst, I suppose the heaviest barrages we'd experienced on certainly our side, and was also coming in from the other side, and then which was even more miserable from the flanks. And the North Irish tanks came in, and they ran into a minefield which hadn't been completely detected. We'd lifted, I think, 75 mines. This, again, was one of the troubles with the plan, of course, because the day before we were going in on the left. And this time we were going in on the right flank. And the plan that finally emerged. So the North Irish tanks were, they lost every tank, I think.
Did they?
Either to fire from the other side or from the minefield.
You would have a squadron with you.
We had a squadron.
Well, that again is very easy to do. I'm just reading about an attack on Biron, and within an hour and a half, 11 out of the 15 tanks in a squadron were knocked out. Kaboom, like that. Which is, again, a very easy thing to do. Many of them are recoverable, but insofar as you chaps are concerned...
They were gone. They never reached the line itself.
But when you went in, this was a daylight attack, mm-hmm. presumably.
First light, yeah.
Yeah, and you get forward, you're getting shot up and all that sort of thing, and you find yourself out in the blue, your communications are gone, and again, it's quite typical. Same sort of thing was happening with the Seaforth. You're getting information from people coming back, at which point things are very sticky indeed. What do you do at that point, or what did you do at that point?
Do you have to make, do you have to make the decision of withdrawing, staying, trying to punch ahead?
Well, the decision I made was that we were to get there, and then it became apparent that we were not going to get to this objective with enough people to be able to do anything. And that's when, of course, the plan should have been changed. But in the meantime, Roland Coleman was, when we reached the line, he was to come through with the Edmonton Regiment. And, of course, he got entangled in the same thing, and that was the end of the effective strength of the Edmonton Regiment, too.
So,
in other words, the right flank was not a success.
So what you just
a glorious failure, if you want to call it.
No, but what
because there wasn't anybody left to do it. I mean,
but when you got there, when you saw things were no good, now did you withdraw your troops? Did you pull back, or did you just hang on to what you'd already gained?
We hung on to what we'd already gained, but
and then
we had very few people to hang on to.
And don't forget that without communication,
and I had no communications to brigade or to the forward troops, except by.
Walking wounded and runners.
This in a battle, keep this in mind, is an absolutely essential thing. It's like blood in the arteries of a person. Without communication, you might as well be dead, because you don't know sometimes where you are, where your companies are, where your tanks are, where your brigade headquarters are, or any other damn thing. And if you are getting crap and corruption, to use a polite term, blasting down on you all over the place, you're not likely to stand up and walk around the field. Or if you do, you're not going to last very long. So you can get bogged down. This is precisely why the line was built, to do just that. And it can do just that.
And one of the houses, you see, Bucko Watson was held up on the right by the company. He was through the wire. But there was a fortified house right on his left, and to get farther forward, he had to take the fortified house. So he had very few people left to take the fortified house, but it was an awful mess the next morning. And there was just probably 15 or 20 patricians and Germans all dead in the house and cellars and so on. And he got through, but by the Bucko got up to the objective with, I think, a few people, and that was it.
Yeah.
He stayed there, and then he was twice wounded by that time. All company commanders except one were wounded or killed. We had no officers.
Would you just wait for communication or for a word to come up then at this situation, sir? Or?
No, we stood exactly where we were and finally got through to brigade and said, this is a can of worms up here. The Edmonds and ourselves are nowhere. And, well, time seems to go. I think night came on finally, and we regrouped, and I think there were a few Edmontons, and,
as you can see here...
That came under my command, I think, such as it was at that point.
There was only one in the brigade that got through, and that with very few men. The
Seaforth on our left got through.
Yeah, but even they got through with a very, very few men still existing. And even when they got to this road, they were being counterattacked. But they did, like you, go to their extreme limit and have to stop through a combination of exhaustion, casualties, lack of supplies, being able to get up, and all that.
I couldn't have got through to them anyway.
Yeah.
So you couldn't withdraw if you wanted to, in essence, then? In answer to my question, even if you wanted to, you didn't have the communications to get anybody back anyway.
Well, there weren't that many to come back. You see, rifle companies were not, they may have a war establishment of 120. Well, they probably go into action about 60 or 70. Mm-hmm. And when you start losing a lot of people, There are not that many left. Back.
There was no one to come up through you, is that right? Or was there
Well, the Edmund Regiment ran into the same...
They were to come through you, the Edmund, yeah. Is that correct? And they ran into the same difficulty. And well, what did you do that night? When night came, as you said, you regrouped.
We regrouped right there where we were, and it was fairly... Like the sort of shot and shell was pretty well over by that time.
Yeah. That's right.
And, I think the 3rd Brigade had gone around Pontecorvo, which outflanked the line, and which is one of, I think that was our plan, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, again, as I remember the plan, you send up a couple of brigades with armored support and all that sort of thing, and if some luckily punches through, then you reinforce success.
Huh?
It's no use, you know, they, General Ware mentioned that they... send up the Edmontons, and Edmontons get bogged down too. Well, it's no use sending up one regiment after another after another to get shot up.
His little heart says, never pack the snowball.
Well, that's one way of putting it.
Now, that battle, 23, well, it ends really on the 23rd of May. And again, as my memory goes, having punched through there...
well, it's on the go.
You can't get me to say that again.
That's
but okay. We didn't... we went on. It wasn't a great action after the Hitler line. We went on cross country. You remember the traffic jam.
Yeah.
I mean, we were straight on foot. And,
yeah.
What the mules could carry, if you were lucky enough to have mules, we eventually ended up in a place called Frosinone, which was not very strongly held, and... it was at that point that we came out, which I would have thought was sometime in June.
Well, I know the final rush, you know, the Liri Valley, of course, leading up to Rome.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't get the opportunity to push on there. We do go a little bit further up the valley, but then...
we ceased at the Frosinone line. I forgot the name of the other place, Soprano, Fasano, or 11 months at that point.
And, yeah.
Not that the Hitler line did it. You can command for so long. You start, if there, really when it comes down to when you start wondering whether you should put Bucko Watson in because you didn't want Bucko to get killed, or Colin McDougal, who you didn't want to get killed either, or you didn't want all the nice guys in A Company.
So what, they do take you out for a rest, or...
So I was taken out about a month later.
It's a month after the hit.
Promoted to a ceasefire job in London with the old blandishments, you know, you'll come back commanding a brigade, and they all stop, and...
So this is what, 1 month after the Hitler line, is that correct, sir?
Yeah. 27th of July, or June, I guess.
But you would be at Frosinone, is that correct?
No, I think we were taken out. I forgot
no,
where,
taken,
too.
Yeah, they were due for a rest.
Well, the PPCL, we had the PPCLI up there at Frosinone with the Loyal Edmonton and the
we started a seat there, and Mark Clark got on the room. You know Tommy Gildy? Tommy was a great friend of mine. You might have run into him along the way somewhere. He was commanding that special service battalion. And entered Rome, and we... had a party after the Hitler line, and Tommy was describing his the plans for his advance on Rome, and I saw him after in Rome, and after it had been taken, and I said, how'd you do? And he said, well, with Mark Clark breathing on my neck and wanting to be in 10 feet ahead of me, he said, I had a hell of a time. But Rome was taken quite peacefully.
Rome was taken...
Once this thing packed in, well, Rome went straight ahead.
Yeah. And the Germans backed way the hell up the peninsula to the next line. Now you say you went back to London shortly after.
So I'm not any good to you because I went back in September to England.
Now what was your job there, sir?
It was commanding the 1st Canadian Training Regiment.
Okay, now
I hope
told
I
you
take
you were
reinforcements
going?
Out to them.
First of all, who told you you were going, and what was the circumstances around that? Thank you, Dr. Roy.
Thank you, Roy.
We'll see you later.
Are you still on tape?
Yeah, we're on the go here. You're pulled out of the line now. How were you relieved gracefully in that sense?
Really?
Well, or taken to, well, your promoted sideways type of thing. As you said before, all your training had been to command your battalion, is that right? To make half colonel. Now that you were there, you were saying they didn't keep you there too long, like they wouldn't keep any one man there too long, is that correct?
Well,
as commanding officer?
It's hard to explain to you, Chris, that when you're a commanding officer, you are responsible for everything that happens in that battalion, every man on, and they're never out of your mind.
And the pressures, I guess, would be very great, is that right?
Well, you never get a night's sleep, for example, because you've always got a patrol, and you always have to know what that patrol is doing. So if you're trying to get some sleep, the IO will come in and tell you how the patrol is done, and you may have to send out some other patrol. In other words, it's full-time.
It's a full-time job, 24 hours a day.
You're taught 24 hours a day, and after 11 months, so, well,
it's time for a break.
Well, it would have been a break if I'd got 11th Brigade 3 months before. It's an entirely different ballgame. You're fresh. Or if anybody does.
Well, what did they say then? It was time. You were mentioning you didn't know who to put in charge. Now, would that not be the senior major would automatically move up?
Oh, yeah, he did. Yeah.
And the senior major
it's not a question of getting fired or something.
I'm not suggesting that. I'm sorry, sir, if that's...
No, Chris Folks, was the divisional commander, and he said you'd better get the hell and have a little rest out of this league.
And then it would be an automatic promotion for the next one, is that correct? The senior major, you wouldn't...
Well, not automatic, no. I mean, he did take it.
And the senior man who took over then would be...
Yeah. His name was Rosser.
Was Rosser.
And he'd been second in command for a short time, and Reg Clark became second in command, and then Reg Clark, Rosser got wounded rather quickly after that.
When you went to England, I gather you would then see the king for your DSO, is that correct? Or was it in the field?
No. Oh, yeah, excuse me. Yeah, you got the ribbon hung on you in the field, a place called San Leonardo.
Which we talked about. Who did it? Who did the hanging? Do you remember?
General Sir Oliver Leese, who was taking Montgomery's place. Leese took over as 8th Army Commander, and he had a little investiture there.
Now, how did you get to England, first of all? Would you be out on a ship, or would you be flown?
Oh, no, a ship.
Was off by ship.
Yeah.
Back to England. Now this would be what, September 44?
September 44.
Now we laughed about the D-Day Dodger thing in the hall there. I gather the song had been going for quite a while by then. How did you feel about that though? Seriously, this whole business of a D-Day Dodger because you were in Italy.
Oh, we sort of thought those guys, they're... what do they know about war? We've been at it for a year.
You got back...
No, I don't think we have. We used to amuse ourselves with D-Day Dodgers, but we said D-Day is one day after all. They had a hell of a time around camp.
Yes.
But in effect, the war there went on from June the 6th to May the 8th, which was less than... We'd been in Italy at that point, so.
Right.
Soldiers, of course, they always think everybody else is having an easy time.
You got back to England, and I gather you'd be requested to go to the palace, or to get to be awarded the DSO by the king.
Yep.
Do you recall the circumstances around that, what it was like, sir? Or?
Oh, sure, it was quite a thrill. I was surprised you got into the, whichever drawing room these things take place in, done with the utmost British protocol and administrative dispatch. Everything is beautifully organized. You arrive, you're taken in hand, and the appointed time the king came in, the queen. I was with a great friend of mine, Paul DeVoot, who was a senior man at RMC. He was getting in there, and he was with the RAF, and was getting a DSO at the same time, group captain of the Air Force. So Paul and I each other frequently still, but we're very impressed.
Did you have an opportunity to talk to the king at all, or was it just a very quick...
No, we were all called up, and the king had kind words for him. The thing that struck me was how small he was, how short. I didn't realize. and also how pleasant and how he didn't stutter.
He didn't stutter?
No. His exact words I couldn't tell you from all around.
What kind of uniform was he wearing, do you recall?
Admiral of the Fleet.
Admiral of the Fleet uniform, RN uniform. You're in London, you are promoted to acting rank of colonel, is that correct?
Yep.
So you get another pip, I guess, on the collar, or the epaulet, and you are to take over command of the training and reinforcement formation. Now, where is it, and what do you have
Aldershot.
To do? Be at Aldershot. And
the number one Canadian training regiment was primarily designed to produce reinforcements for the West.
Now,
Western units.
Now, did you take over from someone, or did you have to start this, sir?
No, I took over from a colonel called Sharp, who had been sent over from Canada. And he disappeared, and I never did see him again, or did I hear about him?
No idea.
Now, you're...
Met him once, and that was it.
Now, as a colonel, with that rank, the only thing that could happen then to get back into the action then would be to either come back as a brigadier or revert back down to half colonel again.
Mm-hmm.
Were you anticipating becoming a brigadier and going back? Was this the...
Well, that's what I was hoping, but perhaps one always hopes.
Was there any indication?
I have been given certain indications. On the other hand, they may have been just nice. Said, okay, you'll come back as a brigadier.
But they actually said you'd come back as a brigadier. That was the...
I've been led to believe.
Led to believe that.
Possibility, yeah. Or somewhere else. I'm in the war. It's a big war.
It's a big war, yeah.
People were coming and going, and then the brigade was commanded, the training brigade. There was a training brigade and a training division.
Mm-hmm.
Their Brigadier Blackadder was commanding the brigade. He'd gone landed at D-Day.
Yours was a form. Now I'm trying to figure out this. Now yours was not a regiment. It was larger than a regiment. It was
it was called a regiment, but it had a number of reinforcement companies in it. I've actually forgotten the number now, but it was. I suppose they changed the name from reinforcement unit, which was, into a training regiment, which was.
No, this would be what Aldershot Command. Is that correct?
It was under Aldershot Command, and there was a Canadian general commanding. It was Ham Roberts when I first went there. I think, and Dan Spry came back. General Spry commanded Third Division. I think he came back very short after that. But Brigadier Blackadder, when I arrived, was already there. He'd come back from D-Day, and he commanded 8th Brigade. And I think with great distinction, too. And he was commanding the training brigade, and I had this training regiment under him, and there were two or three other regiments in the brigade.
Now, what would be the types of things you'd be doing? Just regular training, but you would have battle experience now, I guess. I'm trying to think.
Well, that was their object, trying to... They had these people from Canada manning the training brigades, and they were trying to spell off regular officers, or at least not regular officers, but officers who'd had battle experience.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the COs in my brigade, for example, were a fellow called Masterson, who was CO of the Regina Rifles in D-Day, and did a great job, and was a great trainer, on too. There were people like that that came back very frequently.
Now, could you give this to the new recruits, these replacements? Could you infuse your... I'm trying to think of not... You can't simulate, but...
Oh, yeah, we train the hell out of them. You can simulate practically anything.
You can.
Yeah. And it brought back quite a bit of more simulation. Although we had good training systems. Yeah, the Canadian Army was very well trained. But it was a benefit to have officers who had been fighting back in the key positions in all those things.
How did it feel to be, like, you're winning the war now, it's a matter of time, the invasion had happened, to be in England at this time, and as a colonel, I mean, a very, very high rank, and on the winning side type of thing, and I think of the social aspects, was there a lot of social things to do, or were you too busy training?
I don't think so. We're damn busy training, and there were an awful lot of friends came. I mean, the CEOs, brigade commanders, so on, and there were no lack of friends about the place, certainly.
Did you have a good rest there?
Change, it's a change. You don't want to rest so much as you want to change. It's not rest because you're trying to exercise hell out of these guys.
No, you
always hoped. I mean, I was commanding the training brigade temporarily for quite some time. Brigadier Blackadder left. I have no idea where. When he left, I took over acting in it, and he
now,
they got it, but Brigadier Sprague came back at that point from D-Day.
Mm-hmm. What about getting to the end of the war? I'm thinking of, you'd spend the Christmas of 44 and New Year's of 45 in England.
Yeah.
And I gather it'd be a very happy time, is that correct? Encouraging compared to other, well, you'd spent other years, Christmases.
Well, we all thought the war was going to end by March at that point, you see.
By March, not far off.
Yeah.
Through the spring of that year, you'd be training basically just for Europe, is that correct? Getting the troops ready for Europe, for reinforcements.
Well, Italy was still going strong, so a lot of our reinforcements
went
out to Italy, and some went to, Western regiments in in Europe.
Where
then first, then we came out of Italy in when? March, April, I guess. Right.
Now you would. I'm just thinking. The war's over in May, early May, 1945. Where were you when the hostilities ceased?
Where was I? I was sitting in one training regiment, and I got a signal saying I was to command the North Shore Regiment, and I had very little knowledge of the North Shore, and I had kind of one day to get over and flew over to Dakota and joined the North Shore Regiment.
This is like around 8, 9 May, whatever it was.
Yeah, just after VE Day.
So you missed the Aldershot riots, is what I was leading up to.
Oh, no, we didn't have any riots.
Didn't have any riots?
Don't allow riots.
Don't allow riots.
This was right after V-Day. And, of course, what had happened was Chris Foulkes had been nominated as commander of the occupation force. And he grabbed people he knew and served with them. So I presume that's how I got to the North Shore Regiment.
So you revert back to Lieutenant Colonel?
I revert back to Lieutenant Colonel, and Chris Foulkes is a divisional commander. And I think Brigadier Gibson was the brigade commander. I'm not sure whether they're brigade or... But in any case, the Foulkes idea was... this is going to be Canada's army of the future, the occupation. So bring your best along and get them. So I got Bucko Watson out of wherever he was. I've forgotten where at this point, and he became second command of the North Shore, and all very good patrol officers and things came in, and it was shaping up to be a pretty good force. It was all terribly exciting.
How were you received by the North Shore?
North Shore? Oh, geez. Everybody changed so much there. They'd been commanded by Neil Gordon from the Queen's Own 2 weeks before.
They were used to it, in other words.
Troops had changed so much. Yeah. I mean, there was a terribly high turnover.
I was thinking how it would affect
North Shore. I thought it was great. I dropped everything, Patricia, and I
became so large.
How can you say that after being the colonel in chief of the Patricia now?
No, not colonel in chief. I was commanding officer at that point.
No, I know at that point, but after becoming, like, he became colonel in chief of the regiment in 1959. Now, how can
when I became North Shore, I mean, the North Shore, it becomes your life. And infantry battalions, the COs don't do that. You don't get very good battalions.
You got to really accept the whole regiment.
Well, I was more North Shore than the North Shore. We had large stag heads and got deer and put them in front of battalion headquarters.
It was
a very happy thing. They were great troops.
Now, would you get a new kit, mess kit, and all these things? Would you be expected to?
No mess kit or anything. All you did was change your flashes.
Change your flashes. You didn't have to go out and spring for the kilt and all the good stuff.
Change your flashes and get new cat badge.
Well, Tim, I think we've got a long way today. Why don't we leave it there, and next week we can pick up with the occupation force, and then you return to Canada, and again, returning to the PPCLI, if that's possible.
Sure. You aren't tired of me, eh?
No, I'm having a great time. Thank you very much, General Ware. I really appreciate you coming in today. It's been good. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.